Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Today, my guest is Jonathan Talat Phillips. Jonathan is the author of The Electric Jesus, The Healing Journey of a Contemporary Gnostic. Jonathan worked for the September 11 Fund, served as a columnist for Music of America, and spearheaded the activist media group Green Dragon, where he appeared in international media such as CNN, MSNBC, ABC, Time, and on the cover of New York Magazine. He is one of the co-founders of Evolver.net and Reality Sandwich, and he coordinates the Evolver Spores program with 40-plus regional chapters hosting monthly events. Jonathan is also an initiate of the International Sufi Order, founder of the New York City Gnostics, and creator of the Ayahuasca Monologues, Tales of the Spirit Vine. He is a Reiki master and certified in chi healing and bioenergetic therapy from the Connecticut Healing Institute. He now has a private healing practice in New York City and does Skype and phone sessions for those outside of the city. You can find his site at www.talathealing.com. So let's welcome this multifaceted person to the show now. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Hey, Lance. I'm good. Thanks. Just to note, in a ceremony recently, I got very specific information to use my Sufi name now, my spiritual name, which is Talat, T-A-L-A-T. So if you could address me by that, that'd be great.
Oh, righty. So it's Talat, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. I think I have that. So Talat, yeah, I love your book. By the way, I couldn't put it down, and even though I was on a crash course to make sure that I finished it before the interview today, which I did, I literally would have kept reading it in any case, because it is a page turner and it's just got everything in it. Maybe we could start with a brief overview of the essence of your message and how it all began. So for the listeners.
Yeah, you know, you talked to me a little bit earlier before the call. I think one of the things you're resonating with is that I just had to be brutally honest in this book. I started off trying to write a mystical, spiritual book, and then I was like, this is just not working. I've got to be totally honest about life, my relationships, my shadow stuff, like put it all in there. Like, I mean, I think you'll find there's just some real brutal honesty about myself and my life, and I just think everyone can relate with that on a level that, you know, a lot of spiritual books that may stay just on the elevated planes don't dig into. So as far as it starts, I mean, it starts with me going through a dark night of the soul of sorts. I had been a pretty successful media activist back in the day. I was running a media campaign against, we were calling him King George II, meaning George Bush and his corporate tyranny. Back in 2004, when the Republicans came to New York City, I had worked for the September 11th Fund, and we felt like he was really coming here to exploit our tragedy for political gain. And so, having been to Burning Man, I had this crazy idea to have very flashy costumes that could get media attention. And so we dressed up as, if you could imagine, like Bootsy Collins and Benjamin Franklin fusing into one being. That's what we were. And the media ate it up. We were on CNN, MSNBC, you know, all sorts of television. I was even on the cover of New York Magazine. And like the 500,000 other people that protested in the largest protest ever against a political convention, I thought political action alone could save the day. back then I was a very skeptical material rationalist. But when Bush won that election, I just fell into a dark night of the soul and was looking at our planetary situation, especially the species extinction crisis going on, mm-hmm. with three species dying on average every hour. Mm-hmm. And the problem just seemed so immense that it seemed like, you know, whether I voted for Bush or Kerry, that just wasn't going to solve it, that what we needed was some type of Galileo-type paradigm shift just to totally see our world differently. And is that Chinese curse goes, may you get what you wish for. That's exactly what happened to me on my 30th birthday.
And how did those spiritual and invisible realms become known to you initially?
Well, it was on that birthday. My girlfriend at the time had just called me up and said, look, you have been stressing about paradigm shifts in politics for weeks. Okay. It's your birthday. It's Valentine's Day. It's time for you to take some MDMA and get your butt on the dance floor. And for those that don't know, yeah, and that was actually the best advice anyone could give me. For those that don't know, MDMA is a pure form of ecstasy, and I'm not saying that I necessarily condone people using it, but what it did is that night I got out of my head and I got into my heart and I got into my body on the dance floor. And I just started connecting with the present moment and the energy of those around me. And all of these synchronicities started just lining up, and I talk about that in the book. And so at the end of the night, I'm laying in bed just thinking, how is it even possible that all of these things happened? And at that point, I felt a presence kind of come to me. And when it left, poof, I could see energy fields. Some people would call these auras. I would have never called it back then, but what I saw is we were no longer isolated protoplasmic beings, that we were all energetically interconnected, which can seem pretty cool, but it's a little disturbing when you get on a New York subway.
Right. No kidding. Well, it's funny because back in the day, a long time ago, I used to do that very drug myself and go to the underground gay clubs and dance to trance music for hours. So it is a legitimate experience, and it can be magical, and it can open doors. So now you also, your girlfriends and your friends, you paint such a vivid picture of them, and I just love the experiences that you share with us. And as you said, you bury your soul in the book. They've showed you, or kind of it was a mutual shared experience of learning about the subtle realms, and that eventually took you into exploring healing modalities and also with ayahuasca. Would you like
right.
to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and I'd also like to talk about your MDMA experiences in the gay 90s, right? Because
yeah.
I think what you guys were doing was, and if you go on Amazon, you can find critics of my book will just say, like, he is not a spiritual adept, or he's not a spiritual seeker, he's not legitimate because he took a drug at a party or at parties and had these experiences. But you know what? This is like the oldest shamanic technique on the planet, pretty
Absolutely.
Much. Let's get together in community, take a consciousness-altering substance,
yep.
and shift our consciousness and transcend together and work on that. I mean, people yep. are not going into, you know, Native American tribes and saying, you know what, this peyote thing, it's a cheat. You guys aren't doing it right. And if they are, they're really missing out on a good time, I think, in some realms. Of course, when you open up these portals, you also have to be careful. And I think ayahuasca, as you mentioned, is the perfect example of that. I just wrote an article for the Huffington Post because there's this have you seen that Jennifer Aniston movie with Paul Rudd, Wanderlust?
I haven't seen it yet, but I'll take a note on that.
It's pretty cute. You know, it's a romantic comedy. I think it was a total box office flop, but in it, Jennifer Aniston takes ayahuasca, and I kind of critique that because it's done so sloppily. Mm. There's no ceremonial center. There's no there's no setup. It's just like she kind of takes it, and the next thing you know, she's on a tree saying, I think I can fly, and about to jump 20 feet. But the thing about ayahuasca is you do not feel like climbing trees. It's the most powerful healing modality I've ever come across, and I've tried a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's the shamanic brew from the Amazon that has two active plants in it that they mix together. One, it has DMT, which is a psychedelic substance found throughout nature, mm-hmm. entheogenic substance, I would say, God-inducing, that is thought to be even potentially in the pineal gland, and that's why monks and folks meditate on that area, is to vibrate it and release this. And then it's got an MAO inhibitor. And the shamans knew this, and what it does, and it's for people I know, I often say atheists are just one cup of ayahuasca away from a spiritual experience, because I've seen it time and time again, including with myself. I was extremely skeptical, and in the book, as you read, Lance, I suddenly am being confronted by spiritual guides. And I had mm-hmm. never believed in spirit guides. I didn't believe in spirit until I'm having an out-of-body experience. They're taking me through various spiritual dimensions and showing me even like past life traumas that I had taken on into this lifetime. And the thing about Gnosis, the book is called The Electric Jesus, The Healing Journey of a Contemporary Gnostic, is to experience Gnosis, it means knowledge, but it's firsthand, direct, revelatory knowledge that you experienced yourself.
Right. Yes.
No one told you to believe this. You had to go through a process of knowing.
Yes. Yes. No intermediate knowing and no intermediaries required.
There's no, yeah. You don't need a priest. You don't need a TV anchorman. You don't need, you know, it's you and divine. And I think this is what the mystery and the gorgeous gift of the mystery traditions across the planet is, that they had structures and containers to take people through that process. And in my book, I do get into how I think early Christianity was so much more awesome and diverse than what we've been given.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. And you bring up a lot of the Gnostic teachings, which one could easily delve into and find parallels in our own world now. And, of course, we could go down that road, but I think there's a higher road to go if we continue on without delving into the archons and the, you know, the false creation and so on and so forth.
You know what, Lance? Could we jump into it for a second?
Okay,
because
good. All right. Let's do it.
I feel like...
Been opened.
Great. Because I do feel like there's a lot of Gnostic scholarship can often get into almost like conspiracy theory realms, because... and I believe they were right, that this mm-hmm. planet is generally, there are a lot of dark energies. We're, I don't think we realize we're in like a battle of light and dark. And the light is battling to illuminate the darkness. But the Gnostics, they saw this, and they saw that a lot of the things that hold us back are actually like spiritual entities that were called the Archons, that these controlling forces. And what they would do is they found technology, spiritual technologies, to transcend beyond that. And I think you could look at this world, either look at it metaphorically or perhaps even real, that there are a lot of parasitic entities or energies that are holding us back. I think our whole system is kind of parasitic. It's a design system flaw where I look at it as like an energetic structure, an energetic tree of life, and the tree we've created through corporations and these kind of things, it all sucks the energy to a central node.
Yes.
And leads vast amounts of suffering. And so Jesus is almost seen as this redeemer that comes back to create the separation, the scarcity, the fear, and bring us back home into the celestial kingdom that actually the Gospel of Thomas tells us is spread across the earth. Mm-hmm. Only humans don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually do work with the Santo Daime Church down in Brazil, where it's legal, and they do amazing work. I think they've done an upgrade from Gnostic traditions. And I don't know if this is getting too esoteric for your listeners or not, but...
Believe me, my listeners are well-informed.
Okay, awesome.
You can go wherever you want.
Good, because I know some people, you know, sometimes you've got to watch it, but they specialize in illuminating dark beings, illuminating ancestral demons and vampires or whatever, even vampiric energies. I'm not saying that they have large teeth, you know, or fangs, but these energies that have been plaguing us as civilization, as family lines for centuries, they now work to actually turn them, to illuminate them through the darkness. It's an ascension process, and I kind of think it's an upgrade from the early Gnostic technology. It's quite beautiful and challenging work, and it requires very intense mediumship. But this is where I differ than a lot of conspiracy people and Gnostic folks that are obsessed with the archons. Is I think we're here to be spiritual warriors, and they're challenges and almost guides for us to go into our hearts and illuminate them as well.
Yes, yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with that, and it seems that this is a happening on an individual level. We're connecting by going within, and then connecting to Source, higher self, you know, the rest, our guides, ET, family, and the rest. And out of that transformation, we're beginning to draw to us or gravitate towards those islands of sanity or bubbles of light, which are already there, but we're beginning to be able to move into the higher psychic realms and see these things and literally have the veils removed from our eyes. I think that's the direction that we're headed as we move into the 2012 window.
I mean, it seems to be happening.
Yes, it is happening.
And this is, you know, people, when I give talks, people sometimes get frustrated with me because they're like, well, can't we just heal ourselves? And my answer is no. I actually don't believe that. Yeah. I think the planetary situation, our own individual health situations, it's like we can't heal it ourselves. But when we open up the heart center, which I believe was the sacred bridal chamber, the integrator of opposites, I actually think we're ascending up the tree of life from the third chakra to the heart center. It's like you said, it activates all these potentialities that were just not available. They were like locked off to us. Mm-hmm. And so the spirit comes into matter, and you suddenly have angels and guides, and the Daime would call them kobokos, healing spirits that literally come in and clean you out. And they have knowledge to do that because they've probably been through a similar process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your own process, too, of healing your own, in your stomach, which is where I get all my intuitive, messages.
Lance, we can barely hear you, Lance. We can barely hear you.
Okay, all right. So, where you also healed yourself, you were healed over time of that dark energy that's within you.
The black bowling ball, as I discussed in my book. Yeah, my whole next book is going to be about the black bowling ball. It's going to probably be called something like Warrior Healing, How I Illuminated My Devils, because that black bowling ball was actually a dark entity attached, and it was extremely hard to illuminate. I almost went crazy. I almost died. And then the Santo Daime pretty much saved me. And it saved me because it taught me to totally look at healing in a different way. They look at it as literally a battlefield where you have to fight for your healing. You have to be a warrior. And this is what I just see is most of the addictions out there, most of the depression, most of the anger, they are actually meddling energies and entities. And because we're stuck in a Western paradigm that does not believe in these things, we are also stuck in a victim mentality of trying to, you know, just get by, or, you know, because we don't know, we need to go to battle. And we need to, as the Daime says, battle for our healing and the reunion into the light.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny that we're talking about the ayahuasca experience, because I just watched a movie by John Coonan called Renegade, and it's a shamanic western.
Yeah.
Isn't it an amazing film?
Dude, it's okay. People were complaining about ayahuasca in Hollywood, and I was like, you have to see this movie. I mean, first, it's a great
fabulous psychedelic
western, how many of those are out there?
Oh, my God. I couldn't stop watching. I had to replay that whole shamanic voyage because it's so beautiful. And have you seen his movie Darshan, The Embrace, on the Hugging Saint Amma?
No, I haven't.
You've got to see that.
Oh,
my God. It is just brilliant. So, yeah, these are the kinds of things that are coming out, and they're shifting paradigms. You know, they're shifting our consciousness.
Totally. I think the last 10 minutes of that movie, Renegade, it's like that actually captures what an ayahuasca journey can be like for a lot of folks. And
yes.
Hollywood has not done it on Weeds, and there's been some other shows that have had it. That was the one where I'm like, man, did that guy nail it? I don't think he nailed the Western motif as well as he did the ayahuasca experience.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. And he captures the visuals and the shamanic journey and the mysticism and the metaphor and the music and the, I mean, the whole thing. It's a masterpiece.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what, I want to say there's a lot, Lance, you brought this up, and I've never mentioned this in any interview yet, but there is a whole amazing ayahuasca culture, literary culture that's come up. I'm the director of the Ayahuasca Monologues, and when I did this in 2005, there were like, as far as I knew, there was one book really on ayahuasca, which was Breaking Open the Head by Daniel Pinchbeck. He's my colleague at Evolver. And now we have Fishers of Men by Adam Ellenboss, The Gospel of an Ayahuasca Vision Quest, Blood in My Veins by Peter Gorman, Singing to the Plants.
I've read that, and I've had him on the show.
Yeah, it's just, and you know, now my book's out there, The Electric Jesus. And Graham Hancock is writing about it. Graham Hancock actually did the foreword to my book.
Oh, yes, I talked to him on this show. A while back, and I love his books and his work Entangled, which is a brilliant piece of work.
I haven't gotten around to it because it's fiction, but I hear it's amazing.
Oh,
I love Graham's work.
Well, you know, fiction is very, very thinly veiled reality. it gets down and dirty in the ayahuasca experience, and it actually captures the essence of the Gnostic archonic vision and what's happening today. So the battle of dark and light and the blue woman. Anyway, it's a great book, and I can't
I'll check it out. I'm actually doing an Evolver intensive with him on April 15th. Here's a little plug warning, by the way, about aliens, ayahuasca, and the ancient mysteries. So I'm gonna read up on that. Have you read Supernatural by him as well?
Yes, I have.
That's a good one. Anyways, we could talk about Graham, but I'm sure Graham talk about Graham. So.
Yeah, exactly. More about us. Let's talk about you. So, let's see. Where are we going with this? You also mentioned, here's another one that ties into the vision that is a peek at the reality. And Alex Gray's remarkable work, it's like a snapshot of the invisible realms, the layers of light realms, and the geometric shapes that we see when we're having out-of-body experiences. And you've been with Alex and his work. You want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I mean, Alex is actually a really good buddy of mine, so
I feel
fortunate in that, and he loved the book. He did a blurb. We almost had his image of the cosmic Christ on the cover, and I talk about this image of the cosmic Christ as well. We're going to get into some fun territory, I think, through Alex, because I was having all these Christian-based experiences, you might say, but not in the evangelical fundamentalist type that we were all brought up with, or you know, even Protestant. It was very much more mystical. I mean, if there's anything to say about it, I think the Christian lineage that I think is different than so many spiritual traditions is how much it is focused on healing in the heart. Universal love. If you really get down to get out all the BS rules that people get caught up on, it's really about the immense universal healing through opening one's heart. And Jesus is doing hands-on healing all the time throughout the books. I believe he was using energy. They would have called it pneuma, spiritual breath, spiritual energy, like prana or chi or ki in other traditions. And, you know, there's all these lines of the power drains out of him and heals other people. The Holy Spirit is like this energetic force that he breathes on and gives an energetic transmission to people with. And the study of the Holy Spirit is called pneumatology.
Mm-hmm.
But studying all this, I was having all of these, my guides in the book, as it's revealed, like when I start seeing energy fields, I'm given one word, and the word is so shocking, I just put it aside for months and months and months.
Mm.
and that word is alien.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Through,
well, yeah. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, and so this will get into the Alex Gray stuff, but, you know, I was having a shamanic awakening to what I think is a more galactic perspective. The brothers and sisters out there, as Native Americans would say, the star nations that I think we are potentially descended from. But it's not like a 1950s tinfoil spaceship view. It's not an abduction, you know, these grays zapped me up and they did this surgery on me kind of. I believe there's a lot of higher vibrational civilizations out there that have potentially gone through an ascension process like we're going through,
yeah.
And they're coming in as guides, but they've integrated art, science, spirituality, mathematics. So, I mean, there's this line in the book where it's this guy, he says he's been brought up to a ship, and I believe this guy because he's like an 850, he owns a company of $850 million advertising Manhattan executive type guy. He's not your typical guy to talk about this stuff. And he was like, yeah, what I saw up there were like androgynous alchemists and flamboyant David Bowie-like art stars. A lot of them had really cool tattoos, but it's a different kind of culture, if you will. It's very cosmic and creative. And Alex Gray, when I started studying this stuff, I noticed all these old Christian iconography with UFOs in it. It's ridiculous. Just Google Jesus and UFO paintings, and you will find dozens of medieval and Renaissance paintings of, like, Jesus on the cross, and a guy flying a UFO on one side, and on the other side, Jesus in the baptism, a giant UFO zapping with portals, zapping
yeah.
down light.
Oh yeah,
Mary and the conception, and in this image of by Alex Gray, the cosmic Christ, you see all of that. And the Merkaba, I end up following symbols across the planet, whether it's the tree of life, the serpents, the doves, and I believe this is one of the fun parts of the book, is I think it's a mystical detective novel. It's an investigation into what other cultures were saying and what it means energetically. And I think the Merkaba, which is in that cosmic Christ image, is just so powerful, and maybe we could get into that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, another, just to expand it a little bit further, you also mentioned two of my favorite people, one a good friend of mine, Barbara Ann Clough and Barbara Marciniak, and I just happened to rereading Barbara Marciniak's book, Bringers of the Dawn.
So, oh, yeah.
And that, you mentioned that in your book, so I was like, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and I mean, that stuff all goes into this Gnostic cosmology, because there's this thought, I think John Lamb Lash also gets into that a bit, of like how the Gnostics may have known of some type of extraterrestrial influence, negative, perhaps reptilian-based, that has vibrationally used all sorts of deceptive tricks to keep us locked into a certain reality and feed off us, almost like parasites.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the astral is a lot more complicated like that. I don't think it's just aliens. I think there's all sorts of negative forces out there that we have to contend with, just
that's
as
right.
There's all sorts of... there's a wild west of positive forces, too. And the Daimé always talks about uniting both positive and the negative, and that's how you get ascension. So, yeah, so they get into that a lot with the Gnostics. And then Alex Gray's Cosmic Christ painting, it's got all these alien... it's like Jesus and Mary, a UFO zapping into Mary as she's in her womb as she's conceiving, and Jesus coming back from the resurrection with an alien head in a, like that traditional robe or toga or whatever you'd call it.
Yeah.
But there's this image of him ascending in a hand, and the images are these different geometrical structures. And that geometrical structure of the Merkaba, if you go back into medieval alchemy, you will find the same exact image of several different alchemists, of someone having some vibrational interdimensional ascension process through the activation of a Merkaba, a star tetrahedron, or a three-dimensional Star of David. And my book actually gets into this moment where I had a heart opening, where I suddenly saw this field of light that that just expanded everywhere. And it was like the timber had been taken out of my eye, and I was just seeing another, much richer, beautiful dimension of reality, which was just revealing that we are all divinely interconnected.
Yes, that's beautiful, beautifully said. You know, with all of your activism and which I love all that stuff, but I've been through kind of the same thing, and political awareness, do you feel now that raising consciousness is a more direct and productive means of shifting the vibration of the collective human experience?
That's a great question. I mean, I guess I've placed more of my bets there, but it's also like the physical is a vibration. When I just tried to battle this astral demon in the astral, I almost died. It was only when I started working out and doing yoga and eating healthy and massage that I could then go into ceremony. And I think it's probably similar here, is that I'm really passionate about the Occupy movement because it's a kind of a mycelial network of many different people working in a very different structure than a hierarchical structure. Mm-hmm. And I think these new structures are helping allow for this new energy to come in. We created this Evolver Spores program, and we have 40-plus chapters. 2 years ago, there was none. And within, you know, this amount of time, we have 40 thriving communities that are about changing the energetic physical structure, mm-hmm. which means that instead of fighting for resources and competing, and, you know, we share them. And what you get is abundance, you get resilience, you get diversity, you get creativity, and you get a flow of energy. I think right now, energetically, we are really trapped in a house divided.
Yes.
We're in faulty energetic structures, so by shifting those, you can bring in that reality. But I also think as we bring in that vibrational reality, it helps shift those structures. And for me, once again, the Santodaime is the most powerful structure I've ever seen on this, because the men are on one side, the women are on the other, and they have a star tetra heater, they have a Star of David in the center with a cross, and it literally energy, they call in what they call the force. And this force comes in of a current of higher vibrational energy that swoops through the men and the women. We're creating a magnet, essentially, of masculine and feminine polarity. Uh-huh. The energy swoops in through the heart. You got to connect. If you connect your heart with it, it will then go through you and clear you out, that high vibrational force, and illuminate the shadow stuff. And, you know, sometimes you'll end up illuminating something. You got to puke it out because it fixes the crossed energies. And so for me, it's weird because I look at the Santodaime as a interdimensional activist. They call them battalions, actually. There's a women's battalion and a male's battalion. I feel like they're interdimensional activists. And a lot of their hymns sing about Nova Era, the new age, or Nova Dimension, a new dimension of the heart that they're bringing in. Mm-hmm. And can I add one more thing, Lance, that really sucks? Is this is... For me, like the Daime, I sat there for 2 years fighting it because I had been brought up in structures that lie to us. All of our systems just lie. This culture is full of disease and lies.
Yes, yeah.
You know, whether it's advertising, whether it's our school systems, whether it's our religious institutions,
yep.
political, lies.
Yep.
And so to be in a system that was actually about light and love and truth and the divine, I thought it was lies for like 2 years fighting it because I had all these energies and entities and attachments that just couldn't believe that this was real. And what I hate is like there are these structures that just keep getting knocked down, and like the fact that it's not legal in all of the U.S. or the world is a real frustrating experience for me, that there are churches that can preach hate and, you know, preach homophobia and all these things, but
right.
those that are just about love and reunion, and yes, they use a consciousness-altering sacrament, still have to be worried about legal issues.
Yes, it's a question that I have myself, and it's one of those commentaries about the control paradigm, or if you want to call it a matrix, that we just know that structure is breaking down, and that we can do as much as we can possibly do to break that down internally and to cleanse our own internal house, as I see it, as you're doing, and that serves as our light shines out more and that luminous quality within it goes without, people will naturally be gravitating to those islands of sanity and light that we are.
Yeah, and then I think that's true. I actually start off with my book with there is light within a person of light, and it shines on the whole world. And my approach with Evolver has always been as a community organizer. People are, well, we have to win over the fundamentalists. We have to win over these, you know, all these people that I'm like, well, why don't we magnetize people? Let's get the next row in.
Right.
When they're ready, and that was a huge message I got through the plant medicine, was like, don't try to win over the toughest people first. You know,
right.
Get those that are just having these awakening moments. They're just stepping up. And I got to tell you, Lance, from Evolver and from my book, every day I get emails of people like, I'm having this Kundalini awakening. What do I do?
Uh-huh.
I'm talking to Palladians and my parents think I'm crazy. You know,
I love it. All my friends are crazy. So, you know, and they all talk to the beings that are not on the planet. So, you know, I'm used to it, and when I hear people talk about it, I said, oh, you're okay. Just, you know, get over your terminal uniqueness and accept what is. Everybody's experiencing these things, you know. It's just that they're not talking about it. So you're creating a network where people can talk about this stuff and realize, oh, I'm not crazy. Everybody else is having these experiences. And then you can say, oh, you're Pleiadian? Oh, so am I. Oh, you're from Arcturus? Oh, wow, that's really cool. And what about those crazy praying mantis beings? So, yeah, you're really on the forefront of doing this stuff, and it's such a wonderful journey that you are including the healing aspect as well, which is so vital to these journeys, because we will see the dark side cropping up within us, and that's what I think we need to be aware of that as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I fought the dark side. Like, it took me a while to understand, like, what a battle of love actually is. And it's a battle of love.
Yeah.
Because I was caught up in the battle part, not in the, like...
Right.
And then the diamond gave me some very beautiful but powerful lessons of, no, open your heart and send the love to this entity.
Yes.
And I'm like, but this entity's trying to kill me. And it's like, no, how do you expect him to heal? Like, this is a suffering being. Like, open your heart to heal with the divine light that can heal all.
Yes.
And that's it. It's like, I think my Sufi teacher, he always says, when the rivers are polluted, they have to go back to source.
Oh.
And I feel like, you know, this is where we're headed. We're headed back to source. But we're headed... not in this kind of unconscious state. It's in a whole new state, having gone through the hero's journey of separation.
Yes, absolutely. And we have become so fragmented, and the control paradigms have established that way, so that we will remain fragmented and divided and sucked into various, lower energies off of television and movie stars and this and politics and the rest of it. That we just don't even have time to think. We're so busy trying to stay alive and have enough funds to eat. And so it's really a vicious game. But I say forget the game and play the game that you choose. You know, if you don't like the game you're in, quit your job. Don't worry about where you're going to land. Just know you're going to be all right.
Oh, man. See, I have a different one, which is, Lance, I like your spirit. I think we're very, like, I think we're both a little bit of psychonautic cowboys, so I can appreciate it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I get that question a lot when I'm traveling. It's like, I hate my job. What do I do? And I'm like, well, often it's like, how are you steering the ship? If you're frustrated and you want to get out, but if you just escape, you can end up in a pretty bad place.
You're right.
And I'm kind of like, start, like... warrior up, and maybe your battle for the next few months is you got to go into that job and pay the rent, and
right.
So you can make your next move but you're steering the ship left now. You know you don't want to stay in that job. if you keep fighting it and you keep going in and you don't quit, it doesn't go anywhere. So you just lean into it a little bit. I hate my job and I'm going in. But I'm now steering the ship as an exit strategy. And that new trajectory, I think, will then get exponential. But, you know, and sometimes those dramatic moves can really work. But it just might be more of like spiritual folks and young kids I work with and stuff. But often they'll make really quick, rash decisions and then be like, whoa, maybe I should have hit the throttle quite so intense.
Right. Now, you have very sound advice. And, of course, our guides and our team will guide us whether we're aware of it or not. So if one chooses to take a quick route, which may not be the wise choice, I like your style of, you know, just grin and bear it. You've made your choice. Now go in, pay your dues to the Romans, and make your escape hatch more palatable.
I'm also like the Robin Hood approach, because I mean I know a lot of people that I'm in New York, so to survive you kind of a lot of people here live double lives. They'll go to their corporate job and they'll go to Occupy, and you know, I'm all for take those funds and Robin Hood it, start putting it into the other systems. Let's create a big suck valve, or what is that when you steal gas from somebody else? You know, like, let's start taking that energy and putting it in the right systems. This is actually why Evolver started off. We do have a nonprofit component now, but we started off as just a LLC, as a corporation, because we wanted to try this, and, you know, it works for the most part, alchemical game of let's create a corporate structure that is using these same forces, but for good. And I love that Buckminster Fuller line, don't fight forces, use forces for your advantage.
It's like an
Aikido move, you know?
Yes. Yeah, one of my good friends, Cliff High, talks about Aikido a lot, and the need for creating islands of sanity. You know, basically we're breaking away from the traditional paradigms, and we're simply being the change that we need to be. And I do feel that at some point there will be a clicking in or a shift of realities, and that there will be some kind of splitting of realities. I also wanted to mention that I've been lucky enough to do the Evolver intensives that you guys have online. And my friend Carmen Bolter had led some of these. I did all of the ones with her, and they are absolutely wonderful. So that's something that you guys do, the Evolver Intensives, that is just such a great experience to be able to talk with people that you would like to hear more of. Daniel Pinchbeck was on one of them. There were several others that have been involved with Egyptology. So it's really a great way of being with those people that we want to learn from and experience. So that's, I just want to put a plug in for your intensives.
Thank you. Yeah, if I could say, I hope to see you on April 15th. They're video intensives, so you'll get to ask questions, you know, through video. It's what's great is like you're with a community around the world that's into this stuff, and you can all talk together.
Yeah.
So April 15th, that will be Aliens, Ayahuasca, and the Ancient Mysteries with Graham Hancock.
That's a must-see. I've got to do that. I love Graham, and I love the subject matter. So, that'll be a fabulous one. I'll have to sign up for that.
Cool.
So, and, you know, how does, now Reality Sandwich is kind of an integrative aspect of the Evolver experience. How does that fit in? I love Reality Sandwich, by the way.
Okay, so we actually, when I had finished my initiatory journey, the first one, I have a friend that says, like, he felt like he took the, he signed up for initiation about 4 years ago and it never stopped. And I think that's true for most people I know. Like, it just didn't stop. It kept going. But after this initial one, I wanted to get back into media activism. And the thing was, I was sick of corporate media crushing stories, taking the essence out, and in the worst case, cases, just being real outright nasty. And with suddenly we had open source platforms and WordPress and Drupal and these things, instead of, you know, trying to raise $15,000 to do your first print run of a magazine, you could do it for basically nothing. And so with Daniel Pinchbeck, the author of 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, who also edited my book, Ken Jordan and Michael Robinson, this is four people in Daniel's apartment. We started up this web magazine, Reality Sandwich. And I love that you've been using the light metaphor so much, because we really saw this as like just putting up a lighthouse saying, who else is out there? And the thing that I think we were doing that was so unique, it was like a neo-tribal alchemy of future and the past, environment and spirituality, consciousness, health, all of this fused into one kind of thing. And I feel like it was all rotating on the platform of transformation. And so we found very quickly that there were a lot of people out there. We've had over 600 contributors in the last few years, and then we found out that people wanted to meet up. They didn't want to just create an online community. So we created Evolver, evolver.net, and unlike Facebook, this is literally about getting people to meet in physical space to shift their worlds. And from that, I mean, what I love about what the Evolver Spores are doing in our 40 chapters is we are really promoting a consciousness culture that often wouldn't have a place to grow otherwise. So say like a movie like Wake Up or I Am or DMT, the Spirit Molecule, 2012 Time for Change, they come out and we do film screenings across the network. So you have, you know, you don't find that theater that's going to show it, the Spores show it there. Or like I just did West Coast Tour and had packed houses every night, almost every night, 16 stops. And I'm a first-time writer, author with a small publishing house. This should not happen, that there was, you know, 40 to 70 people at basically every reading. And it's because the Evolver Spores are, you know, they're thriving. And they have a model that I think is, you kind of touched on this about these spaces of sanity. They unite the spaces of sanity, the permaculture people with the yoga folks, the open source technology people with like visionary artists. Like we bring all these folks together because we want to just build this community as much as we can and help it flourish.
Absolutely. And I recently discovered the works of Michael St. Clair, who's working with New Mind Technologies and Radiant Zones. And he wrote a trilogy of books called Light Seeds, which is an amazing it's just an amazing journey that parallels and complements what you're talking about here. And I see so many lights coming up out of the darkness and connecting. And I think that's really, really important for those of like mind and those of unlike mind to start connecting and seeing the similarities and how we can empower one another rather than the differences and how we need to negate.
Right, because we're trained to do a psychic attack. Essentially, we're unconsciously black magicians. We cut down each other's energies and we take it. And it actually creates scarcity and all sorts of karmic ramifications. Yeah. Whereas when you realign that and you're connecting from the heart and it's about abundance and love and acceptance, it's a whole other vibration. It's literally a new vibrational reality, like a whole new vibrational way of being. And that's what's crazy is I'll go from spore to spore, and it's like, I love it, because it's like I get an energy healing at every one.
Wow, you know? How cool.
Yeah. Pretty
that
awesome.
Wonderful.
It's magic. Wonderful. It's magic. And you know what happens, Lance, is people talk about synchronicities. When you talk about Evolver, it's like they always talk about synchronicities. Everywhere I go, it's like, oh, yeah, I met this one guy who did this, and then they knew the shaman. I went to the Amazon, and I cleaned out my depression, you know, or I met my life partner through this one thing, but it was this random. It's just like, because when you resonate at this higher level, it lets the divine healing, the divine flow that actually knows where we're going to kick in a lot stronger.
Oh, absolutely. And synchronicity is what is. And I notice when I'm not in synchronicity, that's like a red flag to warn myself that I'm in a lower state of consciousness. So when I realize that things are happening by accident, I think, okay, what is it that I'm doing that is lowering my awareness, and what can I do to shift my vibration up a few notches and move back into synchronicity? Because that is the magic.
And it gets you unstuck.
Yeah.
Like if you're stuck somewhere, just start following the synchronicities. And, you know, it may take you, I mean, my battle with this entity was a 3-year battle. It wasn't like I wanted it to be overnight, you know. And
well, yeah,
it was
right.
Just like, thank God the Daime teaches patience, firmness, and love. Those can help you get through a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, and I just want to say that. I'm sure there's some folks out there that are probably going through a hard time and just like, you know, just say stay tough. You're there to be a warrior. You know, don't fall for the BS that comes at you. Just keep going back to love, going back to firmness. That can get through a lot.
Yep. David Icke has been a big promoter of us gaining our power, and I really enjoy what he says about, you know, the human race, get off your knees. And he's shifted so much from being more focused on the conspiracy aspects, which we briefly touched upon about the Dracos or reptilians and Greys, the negative beings who run this realm, and, you know, among others, and how we are sovereign beings, and we are the ones who are all-powerful. So it's just a matter of recognizing that and stepping up to the plate and getting who we really are. And that's one of the things that your book focuses on, is remembering who you are. And I love that about your book.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I just think... I mean, it's just, it's actually too beautiful to be true, and that's what's so incredible about it, you know, and it's like these Daime hymns, they just blow my mind and my heart, because they're, you know, it's just constantly reminding us that you are sons and daughters of the divine, that you are light, and you're here to shine it, like, actually light, and this was when I got the message to finally kind of accept my name, Talat, and, you know, that was a hard immediate shift. It was like, you've been wanting, think dancing around this, we're telling you, yes, do it. And it was, you need to reconstruct everything you think you are. And start understanding that you are like sons and daughters of the stars. We are star beings.
Yeah.
And when that happened, a huge dark place that was inside me illuminated. And of course, what happens on Daime or ayahuasca is you end up having to puke it out. So I had a nice purge. And what's great is when that darkness illuminates, it goes back in your field as strength and power, but it's got a lighter feel to that, you know.
I'm kind of curious. Now, your guides that you mentioned that talk to you and call you cowboy, you kind of chide them to show you what they look like. Did you ever get to see what they actually look? Did they ever give you a vision of their appearance or shapeshift or anything for you?
No. I mean, in the book, I have definitely seen a lot of other people shapeshift into extraterrestrial shapes. I had a friend that didn't believe in ETs, and meanwhile, my galactic radar was going off the hook with him. And I was like, I talk about him a little bit in the book, Michael Robinson, our creative director, because there's actually a scene where I'm watching a UFO basically talking to me, and I think he's seeing the same thing, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm totally frustrated with him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Michael... he doesn't believe me, but then finally he actually sees some Syrian person claiming Syrian ascendancy and shapeshift into this weird elongated thing, and I'm like, yeah, that's what they say they look like. And he was really freaking out, and I said, well, you know what, Michael, once they come out of the woodwork, once you see one, they come out of the woodwork. And since then I keep getting these text messages, I'm in Puerto Rico and this person just shapeshifted, or that. As far as my guides go, you know, I was a little disappointed. I wanted my next book to be about aliens. I thought that'd be a really fun book.
Yeah.
And when I found out about this ancestral demonic attachment, it became about that. And the guidance I'm getting is very different. It's not. It doesn't seem to be of a galactic. It seems to be more of a... Well, actually, it does seem to be kind of galactic, but bigger in a way. Maybe more like angelic, like light... angel warriors, I'm now learning mediumship, which is they come through you and actually move your body and heal you. And a guy that I've been working with seems to know a lot about moving energy almost through very quick tapping. So in ceremony, sometimes that will happen as certain movements or to create flow to move the energies along.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, I love it. That seems, that's exciting to me. That is the adventure at 61, you know, having lived for 30 years with HIV and AIDS. That's the excitement for me is I don't know who I am. I don't remember anything I've studied or learned, but you know what? I'm open to everything that's new. And as long as it's embraced with love and light, hey, I'm there. So we've got just a minute or two left for you to share anything that you'd like to close with, and then let us know all of your sites where you can be found. And I just wanted to give you that moment to do that.
Thanks, Lance. First I want to say thanks so much. I've really enjoyed the talk. It can tell you really enjoy what you do, and that just resonates. I would like to just say, like, I feel like what we've talked about, we've gotten like a nice tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
But you know, there's still that 1/9, 1/8. We've got like 1/8 of it, and so for the real download and the transmission, I really hope you pick up this book because it really is rich with characters and life, and it's a quick read. Most people I know, they finish it within a few days and send me nice emails. So I just hope you all pick up the book. It's called The Electric Jesus. Once again, I'm Jonathan Talat Phillips, and if you do pick up the book and say that you heard it from this call, from this radio show, if you say that and send me an email, I'll send you a chakra activation MP3 that's about 25 minutes long and something I specialize in. And you can either find that through TheEvolver.net. You can find me through Evolver.net or Reality Sandwich. And my email is Talat, T-A-L-A-T, at Evolver.net.
Wonderful. Well, Talat, thank you so much for being on the show. I just love your work, and I love your book, and I can't recommend it enough either. It is a must-read. I've been so lucky to be able to read your book, and the last couple of guests have just blown me away. So my team is giving me all the right stuff, and more power to you. I just love what you're doing, and you're welcome to come back anytime and share again, and we can maybe get into the second tenth of the paradigm.
Oh,
Well, Lance,
thank you so much. Keep spreading
the light. You too. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
You too. Good night. Good day, everybody.